This is VSiN Prime Time. Live from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Matt Youmans, Will Hill here on Monday Night Football on VSiN. We got 1 hour to go. This is a 4 hour show before the big Swede takes over, Dustin Swedelson. And SMU is screwing around tonight, Will Hill. They feel like if you're an SMU betting backer, you probably feel like you should have a big lead or a bigger lead in this game. It's 7-7. And what is SMU doing to screw up the start of this game, Will?
Fumbled in Florida State's territory. Face masked Florida State when Florida State was going to have to settle for a field goal and come away with either 3 points or 0 points. Mm-hmm. And now, after another long drive, SMU, instead of punching in for seven, they settle for a field goal and they miss. So they're just they're checking all the boxes, Matt. Penalties, turnovers, missed field goals. I mean, this could easily be like 21-3 SMU. Instead, it's 7-7, and just a recipe for disaster. Doesn't matter who you're playing, but especially when you're on the road laying points, this is not the recipe or to be covering numbers here. Just sloppy football here from the Mustangs.
And if you bet Florida State, like Brad Taylor, who's the only one on the VSiN Pro page with the Seminoles +3, he took the home dog. You feel like you've dodged a few bullets here. And like you said, it could be a 21-3 game. It's 7-7, so you probably feel pretty good about where you're at if you took Florida State +3, even though it looks like SMU's clearly the better team here. I don't know if it's going to play out that way tonight. Live line at DraftKings, Mustangs -2.5, -130, -154 on the money line, and the total, 51.5. So the total does come down a couple points after that missed field goal. SMU's first drive resulting in a fumble. All right, let's get back to the NFL. It's week one. Circa Survivor is over 20,000 entries, so it's over that $20 million guarantee tonight, officially, and Circa Million still open. You got 5 days to go to sign up for the football contest here. Wednesday night, we're going to see the Patriots-Seahawks Super Bowl rematch in Seattle, and Seahawks are 3.5-point favorites, total of 44 in that game. Thursday night, it's going to be 49ers and Rams in Australia, and a lot of talk about the travel situation for these teams. 49ers going about a week in advance, the Rams showing up the day before the game. Rams are 3.5-point favorites here at Circa. There is a four out there at the South Point Sportsbook right now. Total of 48.5. 49ers Rams, to me, a really intriguing game in terms of the matchup and the situation, because when you handicap the travel, and there's going to be some second guessing going on if the Rams fall flat in this game. There's a lot of different ways to look at this game, with the Rams being the Super Bowl favorites of 5-1 odds, getting all the hype, looking like the team that cannot lose. But we know that that's never that easy. It's never that easy in the NFL. It's probably not going to be that easy on Thursday in Australia. I'm on the underdog here. I took the four with the 49ers. Let's hear from Kyle Shanahan on game planning and this bizarre routine that's being disrupted heading up to the season opener in Australia on Thursday night.
When I look at my clock and it says the time, and then I try to see my family's time and it says the time, but it says yesterday. I don't even get how that's possible. So I feel like I'm in the future. And then also when we play on our Friday, which I think is a Thursday in the U.S., we're such creatures of habit. So I call today Tuesday. I call today Wednesday, which is the first day we put in a game plan. But I think it's Monday. However, though, it's Sunday in the present. So, like, I'm going to mess that up all week if you guys ask me. But today is just our first day of the game plan, which is a Wednesday. We'll put in some on a Thursday. Friday's the final part of the game plan. Saturday we walk through when we play on Sunday, which is a Friday in Australia and a Thursday in the U.S. So don't ever make me do that again.
Kyle Shanahan, 49ers coach, entertaining the media with that routine about the days being different in Australia. And by the way, 49ers defensive coordinator, this is from Adam Schefter. 49ers DC Raheem Morris turned 50 on September 3rd. It also happened to be the day the Niners flew to Australia, leaving Wednesday night, September 2nd, and arriving Friday morning, September 4th, local time. So he missed his birthday, Will. He officially missed his birthday. Anyway, there's a lot of different things to talk about here with the matchup and the travel bottom line is I'm taking 49ers plus four. I think there's a razor-thin difference really between these teams. I think the Rams are being a little bit overhyped right now, but the travel situation to me is the biggest difference. I like what the Niners are doing by going a week in advance. By the way, Florida State just got stopped on a run on fourth and one.
Good Lord.
Big gamble by Mike Norvell out by midfield, and that backfires. SMU will get the ball back with 9:05 to go in the second quarter. Don't really love the play call here. The pitch.
Why not?
Left tackle. Well, but SMU was expecting to run, and that's exactly what Florida State did. Ran right into the teeth of the defense.
You got an athletic quarterback too. Just get something going forward. I mean, they did not need that much yardage. It's fourth and like one, a short one, and they like throw the ball backwards, pitch it backwards like 5 yards, and pretty much everyone, not only on the SMU roster, but pretty much everyone on the SMU campus seemingly was waiting for the running back to catch the ball so they could swarm him and tackle him. That play never had a chance. SMU ball, 7-7. Feels more like a 20-point game than a tie game, but you know what? The scoreboard is the scoreboard. As far as Rams 49ers, Matt, first off, for the people that say Adam Schefter, you know, what's he get paid the big bucks for? He's overpaid. He doesn't do anything. That groundbreaking report about Raheem Morris's birthday, I think, you know, pays Adam Schefter's salary. He's worth his weight in gold right there. Mm-hmm. What a groundbreaking story that was.
That was.
I'm with you. The 49ers plus the points, I think that's a good bet. Could you make the case in terms of the travel plans? And I don't know that we have enough of a sample size to determine what's the best way, what's not the best way. McVay in his past has had a good habit of traveling well. I remember last year in London, I think it was, they buried the Jags. Maybe this isn't the best way for this game for the Rams, but you know what? They're not going to feel the effects going forward. So the Rams maybe take one for the team here, lose the battle, but win the war. And the 49ers are more prepared this week, but the 49ers kind of pay the consequences in the following weeks. We can sit here and you know, parse this stuff a million different ways, but I'm with you. Close game. You got a good coach, a good quarterback, and a good roster. Remember, for all the talk about the Rams and you know, everyone thinks they're the best team, the Seahawks won the Super Bowl. The 49ers had a home game to win a division and win the one seed last year. Mm-hmm. Fell on their face, couldn't score. We're all beat up, but I wouldn't sleep on San Francisco. I think they're the right side here getting 3.5, and you probably will get 4 here by the time the game kicks off with all the love and enthusiasm for the Rams.
Throughout training camp, it's been a lot of bad news out of Niners camp, right? Wide receiver injuries, all sorts of players banged up. I think at one point they had 25 players on the injury report, injured list. And but I want to buy on some bad news here because I don't think the 49ers are as, you know, they're not as bad off as it's being reported. This is still a really talented team that's a Super Bowl contender. And I also like the fact that the Rams are being overhyped and the betting public is in love with this team right now. Rams at 5-1 Super Bowl favorites. I don't think early in the season, Myles Garrett's a little bit banged up right now, by the way. I don't think you're going to see the full impact of the Myles Garrett, Aaron Donald combination on that defensive line. And Aaron Donald, you know, might not play much in this game. And, you know, it's still the Puka Nacua situation lingering over the Rams. I don't think he's going to get suspended from what we've seen. Obviously, he's pretty good position to play in this game. But when I look at the Rams' first five games, this to me is a bigger picture question too. You and I were going to talk about this Friday night and we ran out of time, so we'll do it now. So the Rams open against the 49ers in Australia. Come home to face the Giants on a Monday night. So they have 10 days off, then they face the Giants on a Monday night game. After that, the Rams go to Denver. Rams are on the road in Philadelphia and come home to play the Buffalo Bills in week 5. That's a really difficult start to the schedule here, Will, and I'm going to predict that the Rams are going to be 3-2 through 5 games. And I'm not going to be shocked if they're 2-3, but I'll say they're 3-2. What do you project for the first 5 games for the Super Bowl favorites?
Boy, if they ever went 4-1, that's a hell of an accomplishment. Right. Coin toss between 3-2 and 3-2, and 2-3. I would say more of lean towards 3-2 just out of respect for the talent on the roster and McVay, but I'll say 3-2, but that's, I mean, you know, what the travel takes out of them. I mean, you could certainly lose week one. There's not a lot of layups there. And if you want to look at it and say, you know what, I'm going to bet Seattle plus 215 to win the division. Rams get off to a slow start and maybe buy back in later in the season, middle of the season on the Rams. I don't think that's the worst approach. Of course, you can't discount San Francisco. But to me, Seattle plus 215 to win the division with the difficulty of the Rams' schedule early is worth a bet for me.
Yeah, it sounds pretty good as well. 49ers plus four, the only bet I've got in pocket right now in week one. And again, if you're in Vegas, you can get four at the South Point. It's been hanging out there for a little while. Third and 11, SMU. Kevin Jennings completes the pass. That was just poor situational defense by Florida State. Let the receiver run a 12-yard route, sit down, pitch and catch, easy first down. That can't happen. Third and 11, it can't be that easy for the quarterback. But Florida State allows the conversion here, and now it's second and three. 7 minutes to go in the second quarter. This game got off to a relatively fast start. In terms of scoring, the live total was up around 55. The live total is now down to 51. Let me double check, see if this is updated. Yeah, live total 51.5 with Florida State driving. Now with SMU driving into Florida State territory with a first and goal, and now a second and goal at the 5-yard line with 6.5 minutes to go. We're going to hear some from Ben Johnson talking about Caleb Williams and the Bears. I think it's interesting what Ben Johnson says about his third-year quarterback, so we got that coming up a little bit later. Next is going to be Bruce Marshall, though, and I know Bruce wants to talk about the officiating fiascos we witnessed in college football week one, specifically at Ann Arbor between Western Michigan and Michigan. And we'll get Bruce's thoughts on the biggest games coming up in college football week two. Timeout on the field, second and the goal for SMU offense. Quick break here on VSIN Primetime.
This is VSIN Primetime on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Third and goal, Kevin Jennings, SMU quarterback, scrambles away from pressure, rolls to his right, and he finds a wide-open receiver in the back of the end zone. Florida State defenders lost in space, 14-7. SMU, live line at DraftKings, 7.5, total 53.5. Money line, Mustangs, minus 425. Will Hill, Matt Eumanns back here. Final hour of VSIN Primetime tonight. Let's go out to the Progressive guest line for the fourth and final time, and it's Bruce Marshall, professional handicapper from the Gold Sheet, joining the show. And, Bruce, did you happen to see the ending of Western Michigan-Michigan over the weekend? What did you think of that game? Did you hear about it?
Huh. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I heard about it. Yeah, I watched it, too. Although, still no excuse for Western Michigan letting that Hail Mary connect. And in college especially, I mean, if you think a guy's going to catch it, just interfere with him, and it's only going to cost you 15 yards. However, never should have got there. That game was over. I think the Big Ten completely embarrasses itself. And this statement after the fact, they contradict themselves completely. They said all the clocks are supposed to be synced. That means the stadium clock. That means the TV clock. That means their own little silly Big Ten clock is supposed to be. They're all supposed to be the same. Well, then how come everyone shows zero, you know, when the game, you know, the play is still going on, yet that one little Big Ten clock, they say, and they tried to show that in the video, says 1 second. It was a complete... the optics are so bad on that. And I'm sort of mad Western Michigan and the MAC just sort of rolled over here and said, well, that's just the way it goes. I mean, they should be complaining to the high heavens about that, I think. But anyway, maybe Michigan gets its comeuppance this week against Oklahoma. We'll see.
I will say this for Western Michigan. They took it exceptionally well. I was very surprised by the Western Michigan AD, president, coach, players. They handled it pretty well. I guess they're going to let guys like you and me and Will – and the mainstream media complained for them, right?
Well, they act like a bunch of Republicans do. They just roll over and just let everybody walk over them. So I guess that's who they got running Western Michigan.
Definitely had plenty of people raising hell on their behalf for what happened in Ann Arbor. And Will Hill and I were talking about this, too. The Notre Dame game left a bad taste in your mouth yesterday. The Whiskey Notre Dame game, because of the review on the Wisconsin fumble and the kickoff, clearly the Notre Dame player was at his foot out of bounds and didn't have control of the ball. Yet after a replay review, the officials still give the ball to Notre Dame. And then it's a touchdown. It's a free 7 points. Marcus Freeman throwing the ball. He's got his quarterback throwing the ball with 2 minutes to go, up by 21. I thought that was kind of a disappointing display by Notre Dame yesterday, too. What'd you take away from that game and the weekend in general, Bruce?
Yeah, all that true. And this replay stuff is getting absurd. I mean, Rocky Long saying this a few years ago, if they're not going to get the replays right, why do we have them?
Right.
And, you know, they keep messing up and they're taking too darn long with them. And you're right that, yeah, that shouldn't have been a recovery for Notre Dame. The guy's foot was out of bounds. One thing about Marcus Freeman, at least he's letting us know he doesn't mind running up scores. So when we look at these games and Notre Dame's laying a big number, maybe we can keep that in mind with Notre Dame, although it is not too sportsmanlike about it. The overwhelming thought, I mean, there were some exciting games the first weekend. They will miss the Louisville game, made up for a lot of the bad games that we saw. But a lot of, you know, the mistakes out there, some penalties I've been seeing, I mean, egregious penalties. I'm not sure there's any much better coaching going on here. And this new analytics thing where you've always got to go for it on fourth downs, fourth and three or less, no matter what, you got to go for it. We just saw SMU get burned by that on their half of the field in the first half on a fourth down. Teams never used to go for it the way they're doing it now. And when you run a crummy play like that, you get stuffed. I mean, the turnaround and momentum is huge. I don't know. Sometimes it's getting a little hard to watch some of this stuff, but I'm actually enjoying SMU Florida State a bit because we don't have to worry about replay. They're not using it tonight because of the power outage, and it's sort of like watching an old-time game, and that almost feels kind of neat.
By the way, Florida State running back just ripped off about a 70-yard run. Do you see that, Will Hill? That looked like Marcus Allen, number 32.
I did, and if you bet SMU here like a lot of people did, you just feel like, man, what is going on? I should be up, you know, 17, right. 20 points. I'm leaving points on the board left and right, and every time I score, Florida State answers.
Bruce Marshall, let's take a look at college football week two. By the way, your point about sloppy play in college football, I'll say this. In the NFL, you got a preseason to work with. In college football, these guys have an abbreviated fall camp, and boom, you're going right away. And I think that's why you see a sloppy product on the field without, you know, scrimmage games or preseason games, so to speak. And some of these games can be sloppy early. How many mistakes did Louisville make last night? And the Cardinals still were in position to maybe steal that game against Ole Miss. Wild one, 41-38. Ole Miss got the win in Nashville last night. But the Louisville Cardinals gave a pretty good effort despite all the mistakes. Bruce, turn the page to week two. And this is a game at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena that I find intriguing, too. San Diego State was a 40.5-point favorite against Portland State, won the game by 33, 53-20 after a slow start. Aztecs now in the Rose Bowl against Bob Chesney and the Bruins. 11.5 or 12 is the number. What's your handicap on San Diego State, UCLA, and Pasadena?
Yeah, interesting. Now, San Diego State's the Pac-12 team here. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, and, that's right.
Yeah, and all those years they played UCLA, they finally beat them in 2019. I think that's the last time they played after UCLA won all those other games. But that was when Chip Kelly was struggling with the Bruins, and Rocky Long was riding pretty high. I don't know. I mean, Portland State was near the bottom of the Big Sky. They changed their coach this year, so the big win by San Diego State doesn't impress me all that much. Denigal still didn't throw the ball too much. That's the thing San Diego State and Sean Lewis wanted to improve, and he thought he might have worked on the passing game a bit in the opener, but Denigal only threw, I think, 17 passes. They still ran, you know, more than 2-1 in that game. They've got to balance things out to take the next step. They weren't bad last year. But to take the next step up and to beat a team like UCLA, they're going to have to do that. I'm at the point here. I wouldn't mind riding UCLA here. Something's happening there with Bob Chesney. The guy's a winner. You can feel it. It's a totally different vibe around the whole program there. Some of these transfers from James Madison are making a difference. They finally did something right with UCLA football. This guy looks like a home run hire to me. 6 rushing touchdowns last week. I hadn't seen that from UCLA since Pepper Rogers' teams were running the wishbone in the early 70s. And Nico's okay. That was not a very serious knee ankle that he had. He even came in right at the end of the game. I'm going to ride UCLA, and let's see what happens. I think this might be one of the go-with teams. It's still early, but take a lead with the team. This one looks like a good one to ride for a while.
That was a very entertaining game in Berkeley on Saturday night with the Bruins getting the win over Cal. Will?
All right, Bruce, let's look to week two here. Boise and Memphis, a very important game here for the group of 6, the winner in the driver's seat to maybe make a playoff here. Boise impressive against Oregon. What are you looking for in this matchup with the Broncos laying 9 here to Memphis?
Yeah, well, this is sort of an important group of 6 matchup. Very important. I mean, Memphis has that win at UNLV, which could hold it in good stead. They won again last Saturday against Ark State. Charles Huff Listen, I have a lot of respect for Hoff. You know, his point spread record since 2024 at Marshall, 19-6-1. 7-2-1 as an underdog, and we saw them win that game outright at Allegiant against the Rebels in opening a week action. Stokes coming around. That defense looks awfully tough. I think Memphis has got a shot. Now, I know Boise hung in there tough against Oregon, but that was a real kamikaze effort from Boise. And you wonder, do they have another effort like that in them? I think this is going to be a tough spread to overcome. They might win this game, Boise, but if you're laying, you know, a little over a touchdown, I'll take Memphis. I'll take Charles Huff. He's done it before in this role, and I think Memphis keeps this thing real close on the blue carpet.
Yeah, a lot of handicappers liked Arkansas State in that sandwich spot last week against Memphis, and the Tigers scored two touchdowns and covered the number. So a great start for Charles Huff and the Tigers. So far, Memphis 9-point dog right now, Boise. Bruce, we've got 2 minutes left. One more game that's on your radar for week two.
How about this Utah-Arkansas game? Interesting here. You got a SEC team that's like a two-touchdown underdog. This would probably be the only one that would be a two-touchdown underdog in a game this year on a non-conference game. Arkansas, I don't know where they're at. That was not all that impressive against North Alabama. Jackson, the new quarterback, sort of looks like a poor man's Talon Green. I'll point out, I know Arkansas was for a 2-10 team, they weren't all that bad last year. They were at six games lost by, you know, one score. There are two offensive linchpins, Talon Green and Mike Washington, have both made NFL rosters and I think are both going to contribute this year in the NFL, including Green, who may take some snaps for the Browns. That's a lot to lose. And the new coach, Silverfield, in from Memphis, they weren't all that thrilled with that hire. He was their third or fourth choice. And like we said, struggled last week against North Alabama. Utah looked pretty good. They've still got Devin Dampier, and you talk about a seamless transition. All Morgan Scalley is doing is sliding over a couple spots and taking the headset that Kyle Whittingham had. He's been the coach in waiting for a long time. And the Utes look like they might be dynamite here. I think I'll lay the points. Wouldn't normally do that against an SEC underdog like this, but I'm not sure if Arkansas qualifies at that level right now. The Utes, let's go with them Saturday night, Salt Lake City.
Bruce, are you going to a game this weekend? Will you be at the Rose Bowl?
Thinking about it, yep. Possibly. Maybe at the Charger game Sunday. We will see.
Bruce Marshall of the Gold Chief. Bruce, appreciate the time tonight. Thanks, man.
Okay, Matt.
Thanks, Bruce.
By the way, the Reds, Ke'Bryan Hayes just made a throwing error. He's batting 152, and he's a defensive liability. Just made a throwing error that allowed the Dodgers to score two runs. And SMU just ripped off a big play here. Updates after the break.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
College football's back. NFL season kicks off this week on Wednesday night. Now's the time to get your edge with VSiN Pro. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Get instant access to our updated NFL betting guide with post preseason updates, best bets, and a lot more. Sign up now. You also get real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app. Get started for $9.99 or save 50% with the VSiN Pro annual subscription. VSIN.com/subscribe. Do it now. Field goal is good for SMU. 1:49 to go before the half. 17-10. Mustangs have the lead. And you just feel like it should be a much bigger lead for SMU, Will Hill. Come up empty on a couple of drives. Come up short there with a goal-to-go situation. A 7-point lead for SMU. Not bad if you bet the favorite. You should be up bigger. I feel like if you bet Florida State, you're fortunate to be in the game right now. Down 7. Live line is 7.5, total 56.5. And we'll see if Florida State can answer right here before the half with a two-minute drill and get some points on the board. But we have a 17-10 game with 1:49 to go.
Would you think about maybe jumping in on Florida State plus the 7.5, figuring, first off, you're inside the number to begin with. You get the ball now. Maybe you can have enough time to get a field goal. Then you get the ball to start the second half, mm-hmm. and you can double dip and get ahead of the number that way. Is that enough points for you to take it here? Or do you feel like, you know what, Florida State's just been so overmatched here that you're not looking to jump in.
No, I think you're the way you're looking at that's right, because I thought about that. You're going to get back-to-back possessions here, theoretically, if Florida State can pick up a first down and run clock and mount some sort of drive here. Now, Florida State might go three and out and kick the ball right back to SMU. You never know. But you should get back-to-back drives for the Seminoles, and that would be plus 7.5 would be decent value. Now, if you're taking 7.5, you also have to lay 125 with that. You got to look at that.
Right.
I think Florida State's fortunate to be in the game, and I'm not going to bet that side. I just don't want to be involved in this game right now. It's probably just going to aggravate you for the next 2 hours if you do get involved. Florida State returns a kick out to about the 28-yard line, it looks. So 1:39 to go. Seminoles will take over and try to put something together here right before the half. By the way, the interesting game in the situation in the Reds game in L.A., Chase Burns started tonight, and I mentioned I had the Reds plus 159. And I don't know if this was a plan by Terry Francona or what, but Burns was dominant. He looked great tonight. Three innings, no hits, five strikeouts. I was watching. He was lighting up the radar gun. He was throwing fastballs, 98, 99. Dodgers couldn't touch him. But he left the game. After 44 pitches, after three innings, he was pulled from the game. I don't know if he had an injury or if the Reds are just trying to protect his pitch count here late in the season.
Right.
Well, you know, when they have nothing to play for, which would actually be pretty smart as well. Williamson came in out of the bullpen. Nothing wrong with Williamson. He was pitching well. It's just Cabrian Hayes made a bonehead play, threw the ball into right field, and the Dodgers scored two runs on an infield error. Dodgers have a 2-1 lead. Reds do have runners on the corners now with one out in the top of the sixth with Ellie De La Cruz at the plate. And De La Cruz homered early in the game to give that Reds that 1-0 lead. So we'll see if he can do something against Emmett Sheehan here and another at-bat against him. But, Will, do you know what happened there with Chase Burns? Was that just the plan to pull him out and limit his pitch count tonight?
I'm not sure if that was the plan.
Did you see an injury report?
With a young pitcher and a team that's out of it, it would make sense the last few weeks here. You know what? Let's just let's let him pitch a little bit. But what's the point of let him throw 100 pitches? But I guess you could make the case, you know what? If you're going to throw him out there, what's the point of even throwing him out there if you want to pull him and you're afraid of him getting hurt? So I'm not sure what the plan is. Or what it was, but keep that in mind. If you're betting baseball this late in the year, you're going to see some weird things in terms of usage and these teams that are out of the mix, protecting their pitchers, limiting the innings, things like that. But a game we haven't really talked about too much, the A's with two runs in the top of the, or in the bottom of the first off Dylan Cease, and they lead 2-1 here. Toronto, I think, is answered with a run in the top of the second. So it's 2-1. Looked like a pretty good pitching matchup because Lopez, the pitcher for the A's, has been pretty good here, and Cease has obviously been tremendous. But, you know, you play these games in Sacramento, you can, similar to Coors, you can kind of throw out the pitching stats. It is 2-1 A's, top of the second. The Blue Jays do have two on and nobody out here, but this obviously has big implications, not only on the race for the sixth seed in the American League wild card, but the American League Cy Young race, as you very well know, Matt.
It's nice to see Dylan Cease give up a couple of runs. I'll just leave it at that. I noticed that score. Ellie De La Cruz, did he just strike out? I fouled that one off, 1-2 count. Reds runners on the corners with one out. And De La Cruz at the plate against Emmett Sheehan, facing him for the third time tonight. He homered in his first at-bat against him, and he strikes out. Chases a low slider in the dirt, and that'll be two outs. So Sheehan one out away from getting out of trouble here. Reds are just a bad team to probably find a way to lose tonight. But Chase Burns was dominant when he was in there. He looked great tonight. I think it would be smart to limit his pitch count and pull him, especially when the Reds have no hope of making the playoffs. Also tonight, it looks like the Giants lead the Cardinals 3-2 late in the game in San Francisco. We have a 4th-and-2 situation, 44 seconds on the clock before the half. Florida State on the field in shotgun formation and a timeout right before the snap. Is Mike Norvell really going to go for this 4th-and-2? I assume they were trying to draw SMU offsides, and they're probably going to punt, because if you go for this 4th-and-2, you don't get it. That really backfires, Will.
Yeah, I would imagine this is a bluff here, but you know what? When you got a coach on the hot seat, and maybe he wants to you know, maybe he wants to speed up the process here and say, you know what, if I go for it and get it, great. If I don't and
they fire me middle of the season. Who knows what he's thinking at that point, because he's got his contract guaranteed. He's got a whole bunch of money coming to him, but I can't imagine he would go for it here, but we'll see here. 4th and 3, 42 seconds left. SMU leading by a touchdown.
I guess if you want to look at Mike Norvell's situation in buyout terms, he really doesn't have that much pressure on him. I know a lot of people think he's under pressure. He's on the hot seat. If he loses his job, if he gets fired, he is owed $51 million. Well, if you perform poorly at your job, if you were going to get fired, if you perform poorly, but you were given a $51 million payoff, would you really feel the pressure? Probably not, would you?
I'd be going for it. I'd be running fakes. You know what? Do whatever. Win, lose, who cares? $51 million is a lot of money.
How about that? You perform so poorly at your job, they're going to give you $50 million to walk away. That's a nice position to be in. SMU, yeah, it's not. They're not going to go for it. And Florida State's not going to. Florida State's not. That was a bluff on the. Now we have another timeout on the field, but it looked like a bluff by Florida State. SMU was not going to fall for it. 44 seconds ago, I think the Seminoles are going to punt the ball away here before the half. So, Will, that situation you talked about where you would have the ball on back-to-back possessions not going to work out in Florida State's favor.
It's not. And, I mean, this is really, for a game that's 17-10, this has been a pretty dominant performance for just a one-score game. So I keep going back to that Labor Day game last year, Matt, where, you know, UNC and TCU, and at the half, I want to say that was a pretty competitive game. But SMU, the signs were there. TCU, I should say, the signs were there of a blowout. Maybe the signs are here for a blowout, because SMU feels like, you know, could easily be up, you know, 17, 20 or so points.
So I had a, I'd say, a decent weekend in college football. Went 3-0, I believe, with plays on Saturday and Sunday with UCLA, Nevada, and Louisville. Friday night was a fiasco with Fresno State. We're going to talk about that a little bit after the break, because, Will, you and I were on the air Friday night. Fresno was a 22.5-point dog and took a 39-0 beating by USC at the Coliseum. And I played Fresno over its win total of 6.5. And the quarterback looked like an absolute clown. Is that a concern going forward? We will talk about that a little bit after the break, because didn't love what I saw from the Fresno State offense, obviously, on Friday night. But I do think there's plenty of hope with that team going forward, because a similar situation happened a year ago in Fresno's opener. All right, so SMU's got the ball back. 31 seconds go before the half. Kevin Jennings back on the field. SMU at its own 17-yard line, probably going to throw the ball once, be fairly conservative. And look at this, a handoff up the middle. Mustangs pick up 20 yards on that. You got to call timeout. You still have 25 seconds on the clock. So maybe SMU is going to do something here before the half, try to get points on the board. Will, I think when you run the ball for 20 yards on first down, you should gamble a little bit here. SMU's got two timeouts left, and Jennings is going to throw incomplete here 17 seconds ago.
Yeah, but still two timeouts, still enough time here. We're a couple of chunk plays. You probably got a good – with your two timeouts, you probably have like four plays to get into field goal range. So if you can execute, you got enough time here to maybe get in a field goal shot here.
Live line, SMU 7.5, total 54.5, and we will take a quick break. We're going to talk about that Fresno-USC game and also look forward to the Bears season opener in week one as we talk more NFL and wrap up the show.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Reds had bases loaded, two outs against the Dodgers. Alex Vesia came on and got out of the jam. So 2-1 Dodgers. They scored both runs on a Reds throwing error. And we go to the bottom of the sixth in L.A. with Dodgers up 2-1. Freddie Freeman at the plate in that game. Will Hill, we've got the Cardinals trying to rally in San Francisco. One out, two runners on. Giants have a 3-2 lead in the ninth inning. Live line still, just dropped from Giants minus 275 to Giants minus 123. So see what happens here. They must load the bases And not sure what happens, but the live line just moved dramatically right there. Dodgers are minus 740 with that 2-1 lead. And A's up on the Blue Jays 2-1 in West Sacramento. Blue Jays still the favorites in the game at minus 122. Dylan Cease gives up a couple of runs early in that game. Cease has been outstanding recently, but the A's got him for a couple runs early tonight, so I don't hate to see that. Will, I talked about the Fresno fiasco on Friday night, 39-0. Everything went wrong for Fresno in the game. The quarterback play was especially a cluster. And Jaden Mandel was the quarterback who won the job out of camp. Matt Entz and the offense coordinator picked him to make his first career start at the Coliseum on Friday night. I did not like that part of the handicap for Fresno, but I thought, well, if Matt Entz picked him, thinks he's ready, he must know what he's doing. Well, he didn't know what he's doing. The quarterback play was a disaster for Fresno. Let's hear about Lincoln. Let's hear from Lincoln Riley talking about USC pitching a shutout against Fresno State.
Well, we were definitely better. You know, it's great to get the shutout. You don't; those are hard to get in college football nowadays. So it's great for our young guys to be able to go in and play well then and preserve that.
To get Coach P to lead your defensive side of things, how have you seen that group grow in this short period of time?
I think we're just gaining confidence as we go. You know, he does a great job with our group. Our coaches have done a great job. Obviously, we got a lot of new faces and young guys, and that's starting to come together more and more. So we made some really good improvement from week one to week two. Now we just got to keep going.
Will Hill, do you think USC is a legit top 10 team? You know, after watching all the teams in action over the first week, some were disappointing, like Oregon. I think USC looks like it fits the description of a top 10 team. If you throw out that fourth quarter against San Jose State, against USC was up 35-3 after three quarters against San Jose, and a lot's been talked about the fourth quarter when SC allowed 23 points. I think it's hard to find many flaws in this SC team. You got a veteran quarterback, plenty of weapons on offense, and a defense coordinated by Gary Patterson that looks much improved.
Would agree with everything you said. Just want to see a little bit more. Still a little bit skeptical. Want to see them travel a little bit better, Matt. In the 3 or 4 years, or what's been a few years here, of, you know, the realignment where they've had to go west to east, it just hasn't gone well for them when they've had to travel. And you know what? You're going to have to play games on the road. You're going to have to play a game at Penn State, which could be a swing game. And that was a pretty impressive showing from Penn State. I know a lot of people thought Marshall was live to at least maybe cover that number on Saturday, and they came nowhere close. So, yes, but I'm skeptical. Yeah. I think they're kind of a fringe top 10 team.
I can certainly see a little bit more. Yeah, I can understand the skepticism because we have seen USC fall apart on the road before under Lincoln Riley, and the defense has been a disappointment. The Trojans have to play at Indiana, have to play at Penn State, have to play at Wisconsin, and they got a really difficult home schedule. But so far, I've been encouraged – rather optimistic from what I've seen from USC. As far as Fresno, a team I was extremely high on before the season, I've got concerns about the quarterback play. I really like this team, still love this team, and that's by far the most talented opponent Fresno is going to face this season in USC. Let's hear from Matt Entz after the really disappointing shutout loss at the Coliseum on Friday night.
Snowball effect. We got behind the chains. We struggled early on third downs to get off the field. They have really good players. There was some breakdown in some eye disciplines, communication at different times. And so, I mean, a multitude of things. You know, like I said, I know we're a better football team than this, and this is unacceptable, and we're gonna get back to work. And the minute we get over the grapevine, we're thinking about going 1-0 next week.
All right, so I'm still somewhat optimistic about Fresno here. Still like the team over 6.5 in the 12-game schedule. And like I said, by far the most talented opponent Fresno is going to face. Got to do something about the quarterback play, which was an embarrassingly bad Friday night. That USC defense does appear to be legit, but Fresno's got to play better than this. I will say a year ago, Fresno lost its opener in a blowout at Kansas and then came back and finished 9-4. So I think there's a good chance that Matt Entz is going to get this team turned around, but don't love it. Like I said, a pretty good first weekend for me, betting and handicapping college football, but Fresno was obviously a fiasco on Friday night, and hoping for a bounce back from the Bulldogs. Will Hill, how about college football week two here? You and I talked a little. We haven't talked a lot about it. A little bit with Bruce Marshall tonight and some of the games he likes. We talked about Ohio State, Texas, biggest game on the card this week. Anything in college football that's jumped out to you as, or has been an early bet for you so far?
Haven't bet anything yet.
Okay.
I'm almost certain I will be betting Michigan. It's just, you know what? When I see the 6.5 somewhere, why bet 6.5 this early in the week? It's like betting 2.5 this early in the week. Let it get to 7. You know what? If it goes down to 6, okay, I'd rather have 6.5 than 6. But it's worth the wait to possibly get a 7. Same thing with 2.5 to 3. I just think this is a classic overreaction line. I get it. They looked awful. They looked terrible on offense. But you know what? Underwood for the great game-winning throw that shouldn't have been. And that was impressive, you know, kind of falling backwards, that he showed his arm strength, the arm talent, the athleticism. Michigan's defense played fine. You figure this is a game where points are going to be hard to come by. If you can get the 7, the full 7 there in the big house with a good defense, by low spot, I'm going to be on Michigan here. Even if I can only get 6 or 6.5, I'm going to wait just because why not? Why not wait? But I think Michigan here is a home dog here is appetizing.
Buy on bad news, right? Nobody wants to bet the Wolverines right now. You got a big adjustment in the line. Bryce Underwood looked terrible as a Michigan quarterback. You'd be contrarian going with Michigan in the points, but I certainly understand what you're thinking about there. NFL Week 1, so far the only bet I've got is 49ers plus 4. We've talked about that tonight. How about the Bears? They open on the road against the Panthers. Line is 2.5 or 3. Total of 47. What do we think about the Bears and Caleb Williams on the road against the Panthers? Here's Ben Johnson talking about Caleb Williams in his second year in his offense.
I've seen a very composed person every time he steps into the building. This guy, you know, might have had a little bit of goofy to him a year ago, and I use that term with love, and now you just see a more serious player and intent every time I'm around him. And I think his teammates feel that as well. You know, he's getting to the practice field early. He's making sure his part is taken care of. He's warmed up. He's ready to go. He's staying after with the guys after practice. I think you guys see that on a regular basis. And so he's taking a lot of pride in his approach right now. And it trickles down to everybody around him. I think it's a great thing. And so I think he continues to grow up, and he's going to be a huge leader for us this year.
I don't get excited about road favorites, and I don't want to lay the points here with the Bears in Carolina, but I don't like this Panthers team much either. Will, what are your thoughts about the Bears in general and the Bears on the road to Carolina Week 1?
Not looking to back the Bears. I respect Ben Johnson as a coach. Looks like he's a really good young coach, and maybe Caleb Williams turns into a good quarterback, and you don't want to bet against good coaches and good quarterbacks. But, man, there's a lot of reasons for regression. All of the turnovers they forced last year, plus 22, I think, in turnovers, which is just completely unsustainable. They're already banged up on defense. They won a lot of close games. They had a lot of comebacks. To me, the Bears, I think it's under 9.5. That would be the only way I would go. But I would expect a little regression. Nothing on this game, though, because I'm looking to bet against the Bears, but I'm also not a huge fan of the Panthers, and I'm only getting 3 here. So plenty of these games, Matt, you look at Week 1, and you just say, man, you don't have to bet all of them. You can pass. You don't have to swing at every pitch. This is a pretty easy pass for me.
How about Wednesday night, Patriots-Seahawks with the line at 3.5, total 44.5. Any play or thought for you there?
I like the Seahawks. I mean, Seahawks were laying 4.5 the last time we watched the NFL back in February. That's on a neutral field. Now it's 3.5, and it's in Seattle. And all right, New England's maybe a little bit better. They got A.J. Brown. The fundamental problem in that game, Matt, May was bad, but they couldn't block Seattle. That's a good home field for Seattle. And you're laying one less point after Seattle just buried New England. Not that there's a ton of value in these lines because they've all been set for a while, but I like Seattle. I think they get it done again.
I don't disagree with you there. I haven't bet the game yet, but see what you're thinking. Up next, Cashing Out with Dustin Sweetelson tomorrow morning. Super Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis get you started on VSIN by the books at 7 a.m. Eastern, and then it's a numbers game. Kelly Bidlin was in studio tonight. I can't believe how much weight that guy's lost. Will, do you realize Kelly Bidlin has lost about 120 pounds?
He's lost a person.
Amazing. All right, Will, great doing shows with you on Fridays all summer and here on a Monday night. And good luck this week with your plays in NFL and college football.
Matt, always fun, man. Appreciate it.
All right, Aaron Judge comes back tomorrow. The Big Sweet is on deck. Stay tuned. VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.